Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
Welcome to the Daily Jungle, a huge weekend of sports. The college football playoff bracket is now set. Alabama gets that 4 seed over Ohio State. The NFL is popping. Ben McAdoo and Jerry Reese both got fired. Rob Gronkowski and Marshawn Lynch both made headlines for very different reasons. We have a ton to cover. Packers Pro Bowler Clay Matthews came in. We talked about Aaron Rodgers possibly returning to the Packers and the budding rivalry between Powers, Calabasas High School, and Agora. Jungle legend William McGinnis was back for the first time since episode 4 of the Jim Rome podcast, and Pete Thamel of Yahoo broke down the college football playoff, the coaching carousel, and Herm Edwards getting hired at Arizona State. Alvy, do what you do. The Daily Jungle starts right now. It is pretty rare that I lead the Monday show with college football, because normally by Monday, the drama of the college football Saturday has pretty much faded, but not on this Monday. The drama that started Saturday and went to the next level yesterday is not going to fade. Not for quite some time. And no, for once I'm not talking about the Tennessee coach search catastrophe. I'm talking about the college football playoff, of course. The final seeds were announced yesterday. The top three were obvious because they all took care of business. Clemson, Oklahoma, Georgia. But that's when things got interesting, because then you had two spots or two teams for the fourth spot, Ohio State and Alabama. And you're probably wondering where I come out on that. Ohio State beat number 4 Wisconsin 27-21 in the Big Ten Championship game Saturday night. Alabama didn't do anything at all. They were idle. So the Buckeyes had to be feeling pretty good about themselves. A conference title from one of the two toughest conferences, plus 3 wins against the final top 20, surely meant that the Buckeyes were going to get in again, right? Wrong. The committee takes Alabama, which means we're about to get Clemson, Alabama 3. Hey, Dabo, congrats on another amazing regular season. Your reward is Nick Saban. But you know, Dabo's not going to complain about what happened yesterday. Just as you know, Ohio State fans are going to complain about what happened yesterday. And honestly, I get it. I get it. Not really. You see, the truth is, Ohio State was not eliminated from the college football playoff on the first Sunday in December. They were eliminated on the first Saturday in November when they lost to Iowa 55-24. In other words, Ohio State's got nobody to blame but themselves. Yes, Buckeye fans can argue they've got the better wins and the better resume, and they'd be right. Alabama played and pretty much beat nobody. Their last game was a double-digit loss to Auburn, and their best win was what? LSU. The same LSU who lost to Troy. If LSU loses to Troy, then beating LSU is not a good win. And that was Bama's best win. So good luck with that argument. And that signature win, the so-called signature win over Florida State, doesn't look that good right now either, does it? In fact, I would argue that the win over Fresno State is better than the win over Florida State. But with all due respect to the Bulldogs, if you're hoping that that's going to boost your strength of schedule, then you've got a problem. Especially since Fresno State just lost to Boise State. But while Alabama really didn't beat anybody, certainly not the likes of Wisconsin, Penn State, or Michigan State, they also didn't lose to Iowa by 31. Lose to an average Iowa team by more than 4 touchdowns, and you can't complain, period. That hospital job trumps anything good that you may have done. That horrific loss wipes out all the good wins. The committee said as much, and Urban Meyer didn't even bother arguing. Herb himself knows if you lose to an average Iowa team by 31, you best not try to argue that you're one of the 4 best teams in the country, because that's a joke. That's laughable. And Herb knows it, which is why Herb told ESPN, quote, "I was kind of hoping we had those good wins, 3 against the top 16 teams in America, but I get it. The bottom line is we had a tough road loss." Wrong again, Herb. A tough road loss is losing to your rival on a last-second field goal. getting curb stomped by an average Iowa team is something totally different. And you know it. Don't get that twisted. That was not a tough road loss. That was an embarrassment to you, your program, and the committee who could not see clear of it to put you in. And they're right not to. You're not coming back from a loss like that, at least not in the way of making the playoff. But so let me continue on this with this very quickly. In the past, the lesson had been that good wins are better than bad losses. But after yesterday, the lesson is don't lose to Iowa by 31. Hell, if they even keep it within 3 touchdowns, maybe they're in. But they couldn't, so they're not, and they don't have an argument because of it. Here's another lesson about the committee. Don't pay too much attention to what the College Football Playoff Selection Committee says from week to week. Because last week, committee chair Kirby Hocutt said, quote, there's very little separation in the committee's eyes between teams 5 through 8, end quote. Well, if they were serious about that, and then number 8, Ohio State, beat number 4 to win a conference championship, while number 5, Alabama, was, to quote Charlie Weiss from back in the day, home eating cheeseburgers, then one would expect Ohio State would be in, but they're not. All right, and one more thing. Let's be real about this. Don't think I couldn't do 3 hours on this. Let's be real about this one thing, too. If this was anybody other than Alabama, we're not having this conversation. If that was TCU, who was 11-1 and coming off a loss and really hadn't beaten anybody of note, they're not getting the benefit of the doubt. A lot of this is about having those numbers on those helmets and Nick Saban on the sideline. And on top of that, wouldn't it be so like Nick Saban to barely get in and then go win the whole thing? So, to summarize, let me quickly run down the arguments against both. Alabama, they didn't win their division, much less their conference. They didn't beat anybody. And when they got their chance to make a statement, they got slapped by their rival, who turned around and got slapped by Georgia. And one of their so-called big wins was against Fresno State. And if you're arguing that you should be in the playoff because you beat Fresno State, then your argument's not very good, especially when Fresno State just lost. And how do you argue for a second team in the SEC over a team that just won its Power 5 conference? How do you argue that Alabama is, quote, unequivocally better than Ohio State when just last week the committee said there really wasn't much difference between the top teams? How do you argue that they're unequivocally better when the team you're arguing against just beat a previously unbeaten team to win their Power 5 and you're sitting at home eating cheeseburgers? Oh, and by the way, how rich is that, that Chuck Weiss ever accused anybody else of sitting at home and slamming cheeseburgers? So no, I cannot argue for Alabama, but those are your arguments against them. Now here's my arguments against Ohio State. They got hammered by Iowa by 31. Those are my arguments. You're not one of the 4 best teams in the country if you can't stay within 4 touchdowns of Iowa. So, in summary, while most of the country is losing their mind arguing for either Ohio State or Alabama, I'm just going to argue against both of them. I'm not picking one over the other because they both have flaws. They both have warts. And instead of saying that I could argue for either, I'm just going to say that I can argue against both. So I'm not picking. That was a tongue. I'm very happy with myself. I mean, come on now, really? Both of them are so flawed. But go ahead, you can lose your ish over it if you want. Clones, give me 1 second so I can talk to you about Stamps.com. Listen, these days, you can get practically everything on demand, such as our podcast. Listen whenever you want, when it's convenient for you. So let me ask you, why are you still going to the post office and dealing with their limited hours when you can get postage on demand with Stamps.com? Anything that you can do at the post office, you can now do right from your desk. As an example, the holidays are coming up. My wife, Janet, is all about the Christmas card. We send out hundreds, literally hundreds of Christmas cards, and there's no way we could do it without Stamps.com. I'm going to print my own postage. I'm going to do it when I want and do it at home. Trust me, with the holidays coming up, you should do the exact same thing, and you'll thank me for it. Go to Stamps.com, hit the microphone at the top of the homepage, and type in Jungle. That's Stamps.com, enter Jungle for a special, special offer. A four-week trial, which includes postage and a digital scale. Do not wait. You want to go to Stamps.com, and before you do anything else, hit the microphone at the top of the homepage and type in Jungle. That's Stamps.com, enter Jungle. Stamps.com, never go to the post office ever again. I know I won't. That's Stamps.com. Now it's back to our Daily Jungle. He is a legend of the 818. The Packers are at Cleveland on Sunday. Clay Matthews is my guest. Clay, it's great to have you back. Good morning. How are you?
I'm doing very well. Thanks for having me back on, Jim.
Clay, always good to talk to you. Now, guys will say, Clay, especially this time of year, every game is important. But going into yesterday, you knew where you were in the standings and what a loss might mean to your season. So did you and the team approach yesterday like it was a must-win?
Yeah, 100%. I mean, this is very much the story, you know, that we had last year, in which we had to kind of win out those final six games last year. And, you know, this year it's no different. So with five games as of yesterday, you know, we knew we had to win them all. And it's obviously, you know, all the more difficult when you're missing your most important player. But, you know, it just requires guys to step up. And fortunately, we were able to get the win. And, you know, it took all four quarters plus some. But, you know, we got Cleveland this next week, so hopefully we can get another win. And, you know, if Aaron's healthy enough to come back, then, you know, anything's possible with those final three games against some good teams. And, you know, I think we got a very real chance of getting into the playoffs again.
Clay Matthews joining us. Now, guys did step up, especially defensively. You had seven sacks total. You had 2.5 of those. I know you've got a lot of confidence in Brett Hundley, but when Aaron Rodgers isn't out there, do the guys on defense constantly try to step it up or turn up another level to take some pressure off a young quarterback and make sure you get the job done?
I definitely think so. I think more so than, you know, what's happening on game day, I think it's the message that we, you know, our defensive coordinator and coaches and the veterans really present to the defense throughout the week is that, you know, we need to find a way to create turnovers, to score some points on defense. And we were able to create three last week, you know, unfortunately in that loss to Pittsburgh, and then, you know, this past yesterday, you know, we had a huge Dean Lowry had a fumble recovery, or, you know, however you look at it, for, you know, 60 some yards to put 7 points on the board. And, you know, we needed every point we took. So, you know, it was huge, and it's definitely the message that we're kind of presenting is that defense has to find ways to create turnovers and put up points.
Clay, what a moment that was too, right? Dean Lowry had a 62-yard fumble return for a touchdown. What were you thinking when you saw the big fella lumbering down the field the way that he was, and what kind of speed does he have?
Yeah, you know, I was on the sideline for that play, catching my breath, and I pulled out my my stopwatch and clocked him. I think he ran a 5.1, not impressive by any means, but nonetheless got to the end zone and had a perfect opportunity for a Lambeau leap and just – you know, he missed that as well. But, you know, from a guy who missed his first Lambeau leap as well, those walls are real deceiving, though, especially for a guy who probably weighs, you know, 300 bills. It's, you know, it's a tough task to ask for. But, hey, we'll take the points. We'll work on the Lambeau leap later.
Clay, what's it like to miss the leap? And then what was it like the first time you nailed that leap?
You know, it's embarrassing at first, you know, because you go and you get the touchdown and you think everybody's, you know, going to congratulate you for that. But all you hear is, you know, the boos from not having any hops and not being able to get up there. And it's been a long time since I was on the sophomore squad of a Agora Chargers basketball team, in which case I was showcasing my talents. But those walls are high up there. So, but the second time I nailed it, you just, you know, you really got to give it max effort and, you know, throw that vert up there.
You know, Clay, I was trying to look it up, but how are you guys doing in football? And I'm not saying that because I know the answer. I really don't even know, because I know the Claussens came in, and Calabasas is just some kind of power now, man. You got to respect where we're coming from athletically and especially in football. And how are your boys doing at Agora?
Well, you know, we made the playoffs, and then it ended after the first week. You know, I forget who we lost to. I think it was a big blowout, but you know, you got to be proud of the kids from the 818. You know, not a lot of guys make it out from there. So just the fact that we were able to make the playoffs, I think, is a victory in its own right. But, you know, with these powerhouses like Oaks Christian, I think, who just won state for their division, and Calabasas is, you know, playing exceptionally well. I mean, we're holding our own, all right? The mighty Chargers. In fact, the throwback for the new L.A. Chargers, they reminded me a lot of myself in high school out there with that royal blue and gold just looking nice out there.
Dude, I don't know if I heard that correctly. I think that you just compared, or you just mentioned the Calabasas Coyotes with Oaks Christian, like powers like Calabasas. Man, how times have changed, brother. How times have changed. We're now a threat. We're a legitimate power now, Calabasas.
Yeah, we used to schedule Calabasas for our homecoming game, and I mean, those are 40-point blowouts right there.
Not anymore.
I think they were churning through head coaches after 0-10 seasons left and right. So now for them to be a powerhouse, I mean, times have changed. Calabasas is the real deal now.
You know, I just want to say one more thing about that, Clay. When I saw that whole debacle with Tennessee and they couldn't find a head coach and they couldn't hire anybody, and inevitably Casey Klaassen's name came up, I'm like, why would he leave a better job for an SEC job when he's the coach at Calabasas? I mean, why would you do that? You can schedule Agora, get that easy win. You can go to the Sagebrush Cantina. You can hang out in the 818. Come on, man. How is that life? How is the 818 life not better than anything going on at Tennessee? You'd echo that, right?
Oh, you're absolutely right. And, you know, with the way these college coaches are getting paid now, it's rivaling that of the NFL. It's only a matter of time before these high school coaches are making, you know, $10-plus million a year.
Right.
So times are changing.
They are. Clay Matthews joining us. I appreciate you humoring me like that. You know, you had 7 tackles and 2.5 sacks. I know it felt good to come back the way you did in a game like that, but you were coming off a muscle strain, and it would be completely understandable if you were a little bit hesitant. So how did you know that you could trust it and cut it loose, and what was your approach going in?
You know, the first game back always after, you know, a muscle pull is always difficult just simply because, you know, you can't really turn it loose until in practice, you know, in the week leading up to the game. It's not until you get to the game to realize what you can kind of get away with. So, you know, fortunately, you know, for us, we were doing a good job of, you know, we were playing with a lead and doing a good job of taking away the run and getting after the quarterback. And, you know, I was fortunate enough to fall into a few plays, had a few good rushes, and, you know, we were able to get Jameis off the spot quite a bit. So, you know, I felt good out there. I felt rested. And, you know, with 4 games left in the season, we all need to feel that way. We all need to be able to play the way in which we did yesterday to, you know, kind of finish this thing out strong and give us a chance to get back to the playoffs.
Clay Matthews joins me for a couple more moments. Now, you were wearing cleats yesterday that raised awareness for Curadushin, which I know is a cause that is very close to your heart. In fact, the cleats were designed by boys who are suffering from it. We've talked about this in the past, but for those who do not know, what is Duchenne and how do you become involved in the fight for a cure?
Yeah, sure. So Duchenne is a form of muscular dystrophy that affects young boys at an early age. And most of the time, they don't make it past their teenage years. And, you know, their muscles begin to fail them and to the point in which they're bound to a wheelchair and, you know, unfortunately, death for, you know, some of these boys. So this was a cause that I got involved with several years ago, and I really didn't have a friend or family member who suffered from it, but after being involved with the parents and the family members and these boys especially, you know, it really became a cause that's, you know, become near and dear to me. So, you know, for me to wear those cleats yesterday that were designed by boys who were suffering from Duchenne and to see their faces of you know, being able to go out there and wear those cleats to get a win and, you know, have some personal success was, you know, all that great. So those cleats will be auctioned off on the NFL website. So hopefully we can generate as much, you know, revenue as possible with that because 100% of the proceeds are going to it. But, you know, I think the fact that we're bringing awareness to it through the, you know, my cleats, my cause, or just by putting it out there in general is doing a great deal to that community. So couldn't have been happier with the outcome yesterday, and especially the fact that we were able to showcase those cleats and bring awareness.
Especially having the game that you had and you get a win. So what a great job. What a great cause. You know, as I mentioned in the intro earlier this season, you became the Packers' all-time leader in sacks. I know, Clay, you'll tell me that you're focused on Cleveland and the job ahead. I get that. But being the all-time leader for a team with the history of the Packers is pretty amazing. What's that honor mean to you?
Yeah, it is pretty cool. And I think, you know, with all these accomplishments we've been able to have, you know, throughout these past 9 years I've been here, from, you know, Super Bowl to some of these record-breaking seasons, I think it means more once you get away from it. So, you know, I'm trying to continue to, you know, get as many sacks as I can in the meantime. But to have that, especially with, you know, some of the guys who have been here before me, guys like, you know, Reggie White and Kabir Gabaja Biamila and, you know, guys like that, it means a great deal. And, you know, hopefully I can keep, you know, adding to that. And, you know, I'm sure years down the road there'll be another person to come along and break that record. But, you know, especially when you have an organization like the Packers to, you know, to hold a record like that, it means a great deal.
All right, so one last thought. You mentioned Aaron. You had a chance to see Aaron Rodgers throw the other day. You said that he was throwing the ball just as high, if not higher, than what he did in Detroit a few years ago. What's he look like to you right now?
I mean, he looks great. You know, he looks like he's ready to go. You know, obviously, we've got some time for him to, you know, get some practice reps for these next 2 weeks or whatever it is before he's able to come back. And, you know, I don't want to speak on behalf of his injury, but if, you know, if he's healed up and you know, we're able to get this win this weekend and our playoff hopes are still alive. You know, we hope that he's back out there because those last three games are going to be difficult. So, but he looks good, though. I mean, I can't speak on what he's going through, but, you know, from a fan's perspective, watching him throw the ball, I mean, he looks like Aaron Rodgers of old.
Patriots and Bills. Really quickly, let me put this out there. When the Patriots go to Buffalo, a couple of things are guaranteed. The Patriots are going to win. They did. 23-3. A sex toy will be thrown on the field. It was, again, allegedly, probably, pretty much certainly. And yet somehow, neither of those two things are the big talking point coming out of yesterday. Instead, it's all about this.
Brady in trouble, dancing around, waits, finds room, fires downfield, looking for Gronkowski. It is intercepted, picked off by Tre'Davious White on the far sideline. Flags go down at the end, too. White goes down at the 40-yard line. He may be banged up a little bit. Oh, Gronkowski with a cheap shot. That's terrible. White was clearly down and out of bounds, and Gronk just drilled him in the back. That should be an ejection.
That's an ejection. That should be an ejection.
That's Bills Radio right there. Listen, before I get into this, let me just say for the record, this is going to hurt me a lot more than it hurts Gronk, because I really like Gronk, and I'm not sure that you can actually hurt Gronk, so this will hurt me more than it hurts him. But let me start by saying this about that. What the hell was that? Because it looked like Bills cornerback, Tre'Davious White, was coming down with an interception, and Gronk came off the top rope with a forearm to the back of the head while he was on the ground. But seriously, what the hell was that? I mean, aside from being terrible and dangerous and inexcusable, and exactly the type of thing that Bills players are never going to forget. I understand there was some hand fighting between Gronk and White when the ball was in the air. I understand that Gronk may have been pissed that there was no flag thrown, but you cannot do what Gronk did. You simply can't do that. I'm not even sure how he stayed in the game after he did do that. It's one thing when there's a shot to the head in the course of a play. The league is trying to reduce those things. But that'll happen because the game is so fast and it's so hard for guys to adjust. We all understand that. But that's not this. This happened after the play was over, while his opponent was face down and defenseless, and Gronk just lowered the boom on the guy. And that's not Gronk being Gronk. That's dirty. That's out of character for a good dude like Gronk, who does play the right way. But it's dirty. Gronk's not dirty, but that was dirty. And then he tried to walk it back after the game.
I know. Don't really believe in type of shots like that. Not in the business of that. I mean, it was a lot of frustration, and I was just really frustrated at that moment. It just happened naturally through emotions and frustration.
Quote, I don't believe in shots like that. I'm not in the business of that. What's kind of tough to square, I don't believe in shots like that when you just delivered a shot like that. And you might, quote, not be in the business of that, but you just filed for an LLC and opened up a shop on Main Street specializing in forearms to the back of the head. So, yes, the business of that. But then Gronk tried to explain it a little bit more.
At the top of the run, I mean, I felt like it was a big hole at the top. And then the throw was definitely, I mean, I felt like it kind of pushed me a little bit. I mean, and made the play. And I just don't understand why there wasn't a flag.
I mean, you can even tell by the way he's trying to explain it that he's not, he knows he's in trouble. He knows he doesn't have a good argument there. Then he tried to reference an offensive pass interference from earlier in the game.
And there's a couple times in the game, and they're calling me for the craziest stuff ever. And it's like crazy. I mean, like, what am I supposed to do? And then they don't call that? I mean, it was just frustration. And that's what happened.
And then he went to that card. He played that card. What am I supposed to do? They call it on me. They don't call it on him. It's just, man, it's crazy. What am I supposed to do? Brother, pretty much anything other than what you did do. Pretty much anything other than diving on a defensive player after the play is over. I mean, who are you? Vontaze Perfect? Also, let's check the tense on that last line. Quote, It was just frustration, and that's what happened. No, you going with a forearm blast to the dome of a guy who's on the ground isn't, quote, just what happened. It's what you did. It's not something that just happened. It's what you did. That didn't just happen. It happened because you did it. So you got to lose the passive voice here. Take ownership of what you did. Even your own coach, Bill Belichick, appeared to be on camera saying to Bills head coach Sean McDermott it was bull bleep.
No, I understand. It was bull. I'm sorry. Yeah, I apologize.
That's Belichick to Sean McDermott. I mean, you can hear that pretty clearly. That's an apology from Belichick to McDermott about Gronk.
No, I understand. It was bull. I'm sorry. Yeah, I apologize.
I understand it was bull bleep. I'm sorry. I apologize. You know, it's Belichick owning it. Gronk, so you may as well too. It's not Belichick saying, hey, listen, there's a lot of frustration out there. It just happened. You know, my guy got called for offensive PI. Your guy didn't get called. There was a lot of frustration out there. He just said it point blank. And the Bills are not going to let this go. You know that. Micah Hyde, quote, that's a dirty play, man. That's not cool. It's amazing to me that you don't get ejected for something like that. It's crazy. He obviously saw him on the ground. It's like a wrestling move. I don't know, elbow, shoulder. I don't know what it was. I saw in the replay it was just a dirty play, man. That's something the NFL talks about all the time about not wanting. If the refs didn't see it live, they had a good chance to see it on the replay. Just a dirty play. Just touch him. Put your foot on him. Tackle him. You don't need to drive your shoulder or elbow into him. That wasn't cool. Obviously, the game was already, it was a pretty big margin at the time. There was just no need for that in the game that we play. End of quote. I agree with Micah Hyde. No need at all. And there's a very good chance that Gronk is going to get suspended. And he should be. That was dirty. That was dangerous. That's the kind of thing the league always talks about and wants to eliminate. That was not a football play. It wasn't even during a football play. It was in between football plays. And it's one that the Bills are going to remember when they meet again, I'm sure, on Christmas Eve. Don't think they won't be looking to retaliate, because they will. Bad enough that they always kick your ass. Even worse, that they do it again and cheap shot you while you're down. No way this is the last we've heard of this. No way. We are joined by the three-time Super Bowl champ, Willie. Good morning. It's so good to have you back. How are you?
I am great. How you doing, Jim?
Willie, I'm doing great. It's great to visit with you once again. I appreciate you. Now, Ben McAdoo, Willie, was fired today as the head coach of the Giants. Willie, given how the season has gone and how last week played out in particular, are you at all surprised by that news and the timing?
Not at all. The timing, yes, but not the news of him being fired. It's something to say when the team is not responding, when you're playing a certain way, and some of these uncharacteristic moves have been made, like benching a quarterback, some of the defensive backs on defense being pulled out. It was just a mess. And, you know, this is a rich organization in tradition, and historically they're consistent of how they do business. And it just seemed like everything fell apart. So I was surprised by the timing, but I thought it was needed. Something needed to happen for them to move forward.
Willie McGinnis joining us. You know, Willie, I'm really curious about your point of view about Eli Manning and how they handled that. You know, really easy for me to sit here as a media guy in the studio. And I say this because yesterday, Willie, I was in New York and I sat in a production meeting with Boomer Esiason and Phil Sims, guys that not only played in that league, but played at a high level and played in that town. So I'm curious where you come out on this. It is a business. Teams make business decisions, but did Eli deserve better than what the Giants did to him?
Absolutely, no question. It is a business, but more importantly, it's a production business. And I know his production hasn't been where it needs to be, but that entire team's production is down. Defensively, offensive line, I could point holes, and I know there's a lot of injuries. They're slammed with injuries, and there's a lot going on, but it's not one particular player. But let me say this, Jim. If there's a player that's going to come into work and work his butt off and give 1,000%, who really cares about the organization, about winning, and about his teammates, it's Eli. And that is the face, that's the foundation, that is the backbone of your team. And if you're going to make decisions, have the respect have the respect for all that he's done to wait until after the season is over to have a man-to-man conversation with him and say, listen, we want to move forward. You don't bench him for Geno Smith. You do not do that. That was totally disrespectful.
Willie McGinnis joining us. He's an NFL Network analyst. You can also see Willie on NFL Network's NFL Total Access tonight at 6 p.m. Eastern. All right, Willie, one more thought about that. I mean, at the time that they announced that they were benching Eli Manning, it was supposed to be so they could evaluate Geno Smith and Davis Webb. How much sense does it make now that you bench Eli for a game, you fire the head coach, Willie, and the GM, and now reportedly they may have him start again this week? Does that make any sense to you?
Well, I think what they're trying to do is reconcile the relationship and reconnect, rectify their relationship with Eli. And I think this is a move showing that they made a mistake, maybe, and they should have probably have not done the benching situation. And what do you need to evaluate Geno Smith for? You have a lot of tape on him. You pretty much know what he is. If you're going to make that move, you have a conversation and you kind of evaluate the young kid, Davis Webb, at a later date. That's the guy you want to evaluate, not Geno Smith. So I understand the Giants have never, in my time in football, not, the 70s, when they fired a coach mid-season or during the season. So it's all over the place. I just think they're trying to save face now. And them starting Eli, I listened to him talk today or after the game. He's a professional. If they call his number, he will go in the game. He will play his hardest. He will try to win football games. I think they're playing Dallas this week, which is a huge game, and also win over the fans, you know, win their support back. Because there was an outcry for Eli and the disrespect that he was shown when he was benched. So I think when you collectively think about all those things that happened, they're trying to put all the pieces back together right now.
William McGinnis is a 15-year NFL vet, a three-time Super Bowl champ. You can follow him on Twitter and Instagram, both at William McGinnis. Willie, the Patriots, moving on for you. They beat the Bills 23-3 in a game that featured a number of really interesting moments, including Rob Gronkowski hitting Bills cornerback Tre'Davious White while he was on the ground after an interception. Obviously, the question of whether or not he's going to be suspended. Now, you've been there before. How do you think Bill Belichick deals with something like that internally?
Well, he's definitely going to have a conversation with Gronk. He wasn't pleased with his action, and I know Gronk was frustrated. And Gronk, if you listen to him after the game, he said there's a lot of things that happen in the game that's never called. And he's right. If you watch tape, not just this year and prior years, there are a lot of things that, that players get away with because he is a big physical tight end and smaller defensive backs get away with a lot of different things. But that doesn't justify what he did yesterday, and he's not that kind of player. So when the NFL is looking at this, I think they take into consideration his history, what kind of player he is, has he been in trouble before, kind of like the A.J. Green, Jalen Ramsey thing. And I don't think there should be a suspension. I don't know if they'll fine him or not, Jim, but there definitely shouldn't be a suspension. He's not an egregious player. He doesn't do this type of thing. He does things the right way on and off the field. And this is a one-time incident, but there will be some in-house talking too, of course, because that's not what the Patriots do, and that's not what Gronk represents. That, you know, you heard him talk about it.
You know, Willie, I would imagine when they talk in-house about that, it's going to come up that you got to do your job. You got to do your job. I've heard you talk about that a number of times. Do your job, Willie, sounds pretty easy and pretty simple, but if it were that simple, every team would just do it. Why is it something then that sets the Patriots apart from everybody else?
Well, I think the Patriots is the first team that really put emphasis on that. And there's a lot of times when players get into games, especially really big games, where you feel like you got to do more. You got to go outside of what you're supposed to do to help out. And that all that does is really help hurt the defense and take you out of position. So we started saying that by saying, listen, if everybody, every guy on the field, do your job first and then help out later, then, you know, everything will work out. The design of the defense or offense and whatever your assignment is will help. So doing your job also is not putting the team in jeopardy. It's not making mental errors. It's not putting yourself selfishly first of getting personal fouls and getting penalties and making mistakes over the team. So that term, do your job, entails a lot of different things that goes under that. It's not just going out and playing good technique on the football field.
We're talking to William McGinnis for a few more moments. Will, you and I have talked in the past about Tom Brady having another amazing season. He's thrown for more than 3,600 yards, 26 TDs. Like, William, I'm trying to think of a different way to ask the question, but how do you explain all of this at age 40? Is it really just his preparation, his dedication, his obsession with being the best player he can be, or is there something that we don't know? How do you explain this guy being that good at that age?
It is, Jim. It is. I mean, I played 15 years. Vince Wilfork played, I don't know, 13, 14 years at the nose guard position. If you look at the Matthews brothers, they played 18, 19, 20 years. Leonard Moon played almost 17, 18 years. There's certain players that okay, you got the genetics and all those different things, but there's also certain players that understand that if I want to play at a certain level for a certain amount of years, there's certain things I got to do. I got to sacrifice. I got to take care of my body. I got to find different ways to take care of my body as I get older. The mental part of the game is the most important. If you don't understand the game, if you don't prepare correctly, if you're not a student of the game, physically nothing else matters. So he takes charge. He takes pride in that, and he understands that if he lets up on any of those different things that we talked about or I just named, then he's letting his team down. And he's big on not wanting to be the weak link or letting his team down and going out and putting out the best product he could possibly do. So here's a kid that fought from the bottom, who sometimes was probably the better option in college, who was looked over, who came into the league, who was backing up a $100 million quarterback, who just needed an opportunity. And once you get that opportunity, you know, Brady said, I was never going to look back or I was never going to give anybody a chance to say, hey, we're going to move forward and move you out of there. Or in Eli's situation, when his production goes down, what do they start thinking about? Well, maybe we need to evaluate. Maybe we need to give somebody else another look. I think every player fears that, and he definitely never wants to be that guy.
All right, so Willie, what was your edge? You were one of those guys who played the game a very long time at a very high level, and I understand that Tom Brady was taken where he was taken, and you always had that chip, like, I know I can do this, I can be better, I'm going to get the opportunity, I'm going to make the most of it. What about you? What was your edge? What was your angle? What kept you going, and when did you figure it out?
Well, it was the same thing. You know, I come from the inner city of Long Beach, and there's not a lot of opportunity there unless you get out, you know, through sports or your education. And, you know, I didn't have the money to pay for school and go to USC and all those different things. So football was my ticket to not only further my education, but help provide for my family. And, you know, as a kid from there, the one thing you never want to do, and I was taught by this from my father and my mother, you give it 1,000%. And you always held yourself accountable. You give it, whatever you do, you give 1,000%. You work hard. And, you know, I just had that mentality. I never wanted to fail. I never wanted to fail my teammates. I never wanted to go out and give half effort or not give the right effort. And I wanted that respect. I had a lot of pride. You know, I wanted that respect. If I'm going to go and do something or be an NFL player, I wanted the respect of all my peers. And I wanted to always work hard and never give that effort. Have somebody say, he didn't work hard, or he didn't reach his potential. Those words were never going to be associated with me. So there's a lot of players in the league that feel the same way.
Brady sent in an extra lineman, Vidal Alexander, and Lynch picks up a first down and more. Marshawn Lynch will go all the way, 50 yards for a Raiders touchdown. For Jonathan Casillas, and just a little bit over pursuit here. Good block out front by Casimile, and Marshawn Lynch just gashes them to start this football game. And I got to tell you, Ken, that's pretty par for the course for the Giants. They are not very good at run defense. One guy out of his gap. Huge touchdown for the Raiders.
NFL on Fox with that audio. Monster, monster run. But that monster run was not even Marshawn's best moment. In fact, his best moment didn't even come on the field. It came off the field after the game. As we've talked about before, Marshawn has had some truly legendary moments over the course of his career when it comes to dealing with the media. How about a quick look back, a quick recap? There's the yeah soundbite after beating the Cardinals back in 2014.
What's going on? Is the back all right? Obviously, you got back in there.
Yeah.
How important was it to keep this team so good in the fourth quarter?
Yeah.
How does your back feel, Marshawn?
Yeah.
You got those heating pads in your cleats?
Yeah.
I mean, I thought that was as good as it was ever going to get. But then, the conversation with Deion Sanders before the Super Bowl, where he laid out his mission statement.
I'm just about that action, boss.
Yeah. I'm just about that action, boss. And then, of course, this. His Mona Lisa of quotes.
I'm here so I won't get fined. I'm just here so I won't get fined.
I thought nothing would ever top that. I thought nothing could ever top, I'm just here so I won't get fined. I mean, I really did. A truly amazing line that's often imitated but never improved. Straight from his lips to a viral sensation that launched 1,000 memes. But if I'm just here so I won't get fined is the Godfather, then he dropped Godfather 2 on everybody yesterday. Let's take a step back for a moment before we truly jump in and bathe in the glory of his quote from yesterday. It's clear that one of the recurring themes in Marshawn's work with the media is that Marshawn does not love talking to the media. And if there's a reason to not talk to the media, he's not going to ignore it. And he got his reason yesterday that he couldn't ignore. And the reason was a notice in his locker that he had been selected for a random drug test. He showed the reporters the note and said, no, before I roll this, you take a deep breath and get ready for greatness. Wait for it. Let me know when you're ready. Are you ready for greatness? Are you sure? Okay, go ahead. Roll it.
Man, I'm sorry. No, look, it's either this or that. And I can't afford that. So I apologize. But if y'all don't understand what this is, this is when you got to pull your ding-ding sauce out and give them a, what is it called? A urine sample. So thank you.
Bam! You can hit that with anything you want. A mic drop. An explosion. A boom out of here. You can drop every sound in the vault. Any and all sounds on the vault, because you are not going to get a better post-game quote than that. Let me read that back to you in case you missed it. Quote, I'm sorry, though. Look, it's either this or that, and I can't afford that. I apologize. But if you do not understand what this is, it's when you put your ding-ding sauce out and give them a sample. My man just preferred to providing a urine sample as when you put your ding-ding sauce out and you give them a sample. I mean, that's incredible. That really is unreal.
Ding-ding sauce out and give them a, what is it called? A urine sample. So, thank you.
When you put your ding-ding sauce out.
Ding-ding sauce out.
I gotta be real. I was a little bit down at the end of last week when it appeared that Tennessee had blown the chance at bringing Mike Leach to the SEC. That was a huge blow to me and to my family, because it destroyed a lot of the hope that I still had in this world. And then Marshawn comes and redeems it all. He goes and he redeems all of us, redeems absolutely everything with two words and a hyphen. Ding, ding, sauce.
Ding, ding, sauce.
Truly glorious. What a time to be alive. Ding, ding, sauce.
Ding, ding, sauce.
Marshawn just made me feel so much better about the league, the world, the universe, the galaxy, the afterlife, everything.
Ding, ding, sauce.
And with what? Two words and a hyphen.
Ding, ding, sauce.
Let's all say it together. Ding, ding, sauce.
Ding, ding, sauce.
Let's all say it with Marshawn. Ding, 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 sauce. Sauce. Again, everybody. Ding, 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 sauce. Don't you feel better? Now, here's the thing. This is really important. Let's all say it again one more time together.
Ding, ding, sauce.
I have a warning for all of you. That was a truly beautiful thing that happened after yesterday's game.
a special moment. Now, I did hesitate to even mention it because I know how you degenerates are. You take something wondrous, you take something wonderful, and you ruin it. I know you clones. I know what you're thinking before you think it. And I know exactly what you're going to do. You're going to ruin it, and you're going to ruin it by coming in here with your Yuri Sukart and A-Rod resets, or you're going to try and jam a Najee Davenport reference into a tweet or an email about Ding Ding Sauce.
Ding Ding Sauce.
Don't. Don't do it. Do not do it. I have been building this for decades. I don't need some of you losers ruining it all in a matter of moments with your bathroom humor. Because you will ruin it. So instead of ruining something wondrous, appreciate it for what it is. Let's know that we had this moment. And then never speak of it ever again. How about that? Because the moment some of you losers say Ding Ding Sauce,
Ding Ding Sauce,
you will ruin it. And I will not have you ruin something as amazing as the phrase Ding Ding Sauce.
Ding Ding Sauce.
And the guy who said it. Don't do it, clones. Find something else to ruin. Just not that. I'm not standing for it. I'm not having it. 1-800 Ding Ding Sauce.
Ding Ding Sauce.
Right when we needed it most. And look at the AFC West. All of a sudden, now you got a three-way tie atop. Well, you know it's a busy day if I haven't even gotten to the Chiefs yet. And their meltdown. 1-800-636-8686. What else do you want to cover? What do you want to hit on? I'm nowhere near where I want to be. I want to talk about the Vikings and Case Keenum. I want to talk about Kansas City and the fact that Alex Smith got off. He had a great game, and it still didn't matter because they could not get off the field. How about Seattle? They were dead in the water, allegedly. They're busted up. There's almost nothing left of the LOB, and they find a way to beat Philadelphia. Shock Philadelphia. Chargers hold on to beat the Browns. And in Detroit, when they were going to blow up the dome, even that didn't work out. We could talk some baseball, too. The Yankees hire Aaron Boone. Do you like that move or not? All of those topics work for me. Who do you like? Alabama or Ohio State? If you heard me at the show open, instead of arguing for either one, I've chosen to argue against both of them. And we talked about Ding Ding Sauce. I don't want you going there. I don't want you ruining that.
Ding,
Gronk
ding, sauce.
Going cheap shot. Still can't believe that guy did what he did, and I think that should get him suspended. Didn't get him ejected, but it could get him suspended. 1-800-636-8686. Also earlier today, I gave you our voicemail number. Last chance to leave me a voicemail message for episode 16 of the Jim Rome podcast, which is going to drop tomorrow. I am going to tape that tomorrow with Gary Vaynerchuk. Gary V is on fire. And he's going to be the lone guest in episode 16. Should we try a telephone call right here? I'm thinking about it. Hey, look, he's on topic. He's in market. Let's go to Oakland. I just talked about Marshawn Lynch, and the Raiders get a win they had to have. And they're in a three-way tie now in the AFC West. Let's go to Evan in Oakland. Evan, good morning. How are you?
Jimmy, what's up, man?
Evan.
It's Evan in Oakland, and I'm going to tell you about why the Raiders suck.
I'm all ears, Evan. What's up?
All right. Well, first of all, I've been here for almost 20 years in Oakland. I'm a lifelong New England Patriots fan. I've still got these guys talking about the Tuck rule. They can't move on from it. Never mind the fact that the next year later they had the league MVP in Rich Gannon, and the curse of Chucky tended to bust their balls in the Super Bowl because they didn't change the language of the plays, and they complained about that as well. Now, as far as Marshawn Lynch goes, the thing he's going to be most famous for in his whole career is the fact that Russell Wilson didn't hand the ball off to him in the Super Bowl, and Malcolm Butler stepped up and became a national treasure, okay? And now, here's the other thing. David Carr, are you kidding me? Is this guy a vampire? Does he have eyeliner tattooed around his eyes? He's the creepiest-looking dude I've ever seen. And now, as far as Gronk, he lost his mind. There's no question about it. I speak fluent Gronk. I don't speak it, but I understand it. I could speak a few words of Gronk, And when he says, when he goes and says, what am I going to do about it? What am I supposed to do? He's talking about the way he's held all the time, and what is he supposed to do about that? He knows he was wrong for what he did. That was not what he was talking about, hitting the guy with a forearm shiver. That was brutal. But check it out. As far as Raiders go, they're always going to suck. Doesn't matter if they're in Oakland, if they're in Vegas, if they're in Stockton, if they're in L.A., they will always be straight TV sauce. Thank you. I'm out.
Pete Thamel is my guest. Take me back to Saturday night and Sunday morning. Before the college football playoff seeds were announced, Pete, what kind of thoughts were you having about where the committee might go with that and their approach to a fourth team?
Well, I was dead wrong, Jim, because I was reading the committee's criteria. And it basically came down to this disparity. The committee needed to decide whether or not Alabama was unequivocally better than Ohio State as a candidate. One loss Alabama, two loss Ohio State. And the tension was Alabama had no great wins, and Ohio State had one horrific loss. And in my mind, reading it, they were both very flawed. And I wouldn't be ready to stand on the table for any of them. So I thought the way they were clustered, and talking to people who understand how the rules work, I thought Ohio State would get in because of its better wins and its conference championship. But I was wrong. I mean, there's no other way to put it. It was the first time we really had significant drama in that space of selecting teams, Jim. And, I mean, the committee made a statement putting two SEC teams in as a paradigm changer.
You know, Pete, that's really funny because that's pretty much the way I'm approaching this. Myself, instead of trying to formulate an argument for either one of them, I'm just arguing against both of them. But why don't we just go ahead and we'll go ahead and play along, Pete. Is Alabama, quote, in your mind, are they, quote, unequivocally better than Ohio State?
I don't think so, because you have to beat someone. And they really hadn't beaten anyone. Now, look, when they beat Florida State, when Francois was healthy, that certainly was a good win at the time. But Florida State self-destructed. You know, they self-destructed so much their coach just got a $75 million contract, right? May we all self-destruct like that,
right,
Jim. But Florida State was not a good football team. It was a 500 football team that had to basically scam an extra game to get to a bowl. And so because of that, Alabama won. They thumped LSU, and they won a tight game against a good but not great Mississippi State team on the road. So it would be hard to say they were unequivocally better. But that is what the committee decided. It was interesting. They went into statistics when you listen to Kirby Hokut, that they went into where Alabama's defensive statistics were and such. I felt like the first time they really had gotten that granular in making an explanation. And I'm with you, Jim. I don't think it's a bad choice. There were two mediocre options. I'm just surprised that they did it.
Pete Thamel joining us. Now, as you pointed out, Pete, if you were to give truth serum to everybody involved in the development of the college football playoff, how much of that stems from the Alabama-LSU-BCS championship game?
Yeah, and that's what I wrote on Saturday night going into the game. Like, no one talks about this out loud, but the reason we have a college football playoff right now, after decades of ridiculous resistance and excuses, is because that was, I believe, the sixth of seven in a row national BCS titles won by the SEC. Alabama played LSU in that title game, and the curmudgeons around college sports that had resisted a playoff swallowed hard and said, boy, we need to create a little bit of different system here, because if we don't, there's a potential for an SEC monopoly, because the SEC was just humming at the time. Now, the SEC has reverted to the mean, and quite frankly, it's a hot mess right now. When you look at Tennessee, when you look at Arkansas, when you especially look at Ole Miss with the significant NCAA sanctions that they just had, the SEC is not what it used to be. And that doesn't mean Alabama isn't good or Alabama can't win, but the league itself, top to bottom, was clearly the most dominant in college sports, and you can't say that anymore. I don't know if we have a playoff right now if Alabama doesn't play LSU in that title game.
All right, so you're right. They're not what they were, and they might have regressed to the mean, but they've got two more teams in. So knowing all of that, how do you think the folks in the Big Ten are feeling right now about the fact that a second SEC team in a not-so-great SEC was able to get in over the Big Ten champion?
Oh, they don't feel good. There's no doubt about it. I wonder, Jim, if we'd be having a different conversation right now if Johnny Dixon doesn't drop a touchdown pass for Ohio State and JT Barrett hits one of his two open guys in the end zone on the drive at the end of the half there. If that's a three touchdown game instead of a one touchdown game, is this the Cardale Jones redo, where that was a somewhat tight selection Sunday a couple of years ago, but because of the temper of the way Ohio State beat Wisconsin, it was 50-something to nothing. I don't remember the exact final. It was different. So no, I don't think the Big Ten leaders feel good at all. And I mean, look, I think the Big Ten is a pretty solid conference right now. Penn State is back. Michigan's not great, but they were very good last year. And obviously, Michigan State is sort of the most underrated little juggernaut. It had a hiccup last year, but it's going on. So, but the Big Ten also doesn't have depth, much like right now the SEC doesn't have depth either. So, if you had told me at the beginning of this season that the Big Ten champion would not get in the playoff, I would have been very surprised. And my only theory would have been that there was some cannibalization. And that's essentially what happened. Not only did Ohio State lose at Iowa, but they got thumped at Iowa. I think if they lost that game by a field goal, we may be having a different conversation as well.
I would think even a touchdown. I mean, maybe I don't know, Pete, maybe even 10 points, but that is a different conversation. Yeah. Listen, before
giving
you go,
double nickels is not a good look.
No, you're not overcoming that. Listen, in addition to all of this, you've been all over the coaching moves that have taken place, and they've been pretty amazing. First of all, what do you make of Scott Frost going to Nebraska? Nebraska fans obviously are absolutely delirious with that. Do you think that he can have success there, and to what degree?
Great hire, and he's a great coach, so he will have success. The challenge is going to be recruiting. There just simply aren't a lot of recruits who will play the style that Scott Frost wants to play in the greater Lincoln, Omaha, Midwest area, quite frankly. So this is going to be a drastic identity shift for Nebraska if there's going to be, you know, an up-tempo, if they're going to play the up-tempo style, which Scott Frost thrived in as an assistant at Oregon and coordinator at Oregon, and obviously super thrived in the miraculous turnaround in two seasons at UCF. The question is, where do you recruit now if you're in Nebraska? When they were in the Big 12, they had a toehold in Texas. It's a little harder to do that in the Big 10. It's just not as organic. And if you're from California, do players from California want to go all the way to Nebraska? Nebraska in its glory days cleaned up in New Jersey. There's you got to fly over a lot of good schools to get to Nebraska from New Jersey these days, and a lot of good schools in that league. So that's my question. As Nebraska shifts sort of from the identity under Mike Riley, which was more sort of pro-style sensibilities, to Scott Frost, where does the talent come from? That's the big question.
Hey, Pete, what about Jimbo Fisher? So he's introduced to Texas A&M today. Obviously, he's going to make a ton of dough working there. But ultimately, what was that move about? For instance, what was it that made A&M that much more attractive to him than Florida State? Is it just money?
I think $75 million is your first reason, right?
Right.
Florida State has been spinning like, we gave Jimbo everything. If I read one more thing about it, we gave him a practice facility. We gave him this. Florida State is pure because Clemson has passed them as a program. It has clearly leapt past them, not only on the field but off the field. Clemson has invested more and invested smarter than Florida State has, and Florida State needs to catch up. But I think it's very hard in modern college football, Jim, to reboot. And I think it's easier to start over. And what Jimbo Fisher did was he extended his career shelf life and went and obviously chased money. But also, look, what Brian Kelly did this year to get Notre Dame back to 9-3 and in a decent bowl game and back nationally relevant and in playoff talk, that was hard. Like, he got rid of his strength coach. He got rid of his offensive coordinator, defensive coordinator. Like, the entire staff changed, rebooted, and it worked. That is a unicorn, what happened at Notre Dame. When you lose momentum and have to reboot in college football these days, it's hard, and sometimes you don't have the time. Now, look, if Jimbo Fisher got fired at Florida State, they would have to pay him like $39 million. But I just think it was easier to go somewhere where you're wanted wholeheartedly and start over than try to, you know, fire assistants and change staff and reboot, because that is a very difficult process.
I think that's really interesting what you just said, that it's better or easier to start over than to reboot. One last thought then. What about Arizona State? And I want you to try and explain this to me, Pete, because they bring Herm Edwards in, and then the statement about the hiring is really interesting. Quote, the department's new leadership model will be similar to an NFL approach using a GM structure. It's a collaborative approach to managing the ASU football program that includes sport and administrative divisions, which will operate as distinct but collective units focused on elevating all aspects of Sun Devil football, end of quote. I mean, that sounds like a hell of a lot of corporate speak. What do you make of that approach? Do you even know what that means?
Sorry, not at all. What were you saying?
Yeah, right?
It's this, and I wrote this last week when his name first surfaced, which seemed like they were sort of running a trial balloon out there. I mean, I think it's going to be a disaster, Jim. Herm Edwards hasn't coached in college football since 1989. He's a smart man, and he would be a great, like, GM type to mentor kids and bring kids along. I just don't know what qualifies him to be a modern football coach. And Ray Anderson, along with, like, the most mocked press release in modern college football history, also gave just an unbelievably poor press conference where he set the expectations at levels where Arizona State simply hasn't been historically. They don't have local talent. They don't have very good facilities. It is just kind of a middling Pac-12 program. And I can understand wanting to revive that, but, you know, saying second place in a weak Pac-12 isn't good enough, and we don't want to go to the Cactus Bowl. I mean, you're just, like, opening yourself for lampooning. Look, like, a lot of people lampoon everyone. Every time there's an out-of-the-box NFL hire in college football, everyone's like, well, Pete Carroll worked, and no one would have thought that would work. Well, that's our second unicorn of the day, all right? This is, you know, if this were a stock, I would short it. I just can't. It is very, very, very difficult for me to see this working, Jim. I mean, I wrote it last week. I think it's going to be a disaster. There's no more polite way to say it than that.
That's it for now, Clones. Coming off a crazy weekend where I rode that bird to New York and back, and we are prepped and ready to roll for tomorrow's Jim Rome podcast. Gary Vaynerchuk is my guest for episode 16. You know you do not want to miss Gary V. Check back tomorrow. See you then. I'm out.